The saying goes, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. But what if you don't have access to fresh produce where you live? Or transportation to the doctor if that apple doesn't work? Or someone to watch your kids while you're at the doctor? Or, you get the point. A person's success in managing their health and wellness may depend much less on what happens inside of a doctor's office than what happens outside of it. There's plenty about where we are born, grow, live, and work, and how these circumstances are shaped by access to resources that influence the health we can achieve. There's a name for it: social determinants of health. So as a community, how might we begin to address these social determinants? How might we make progress towards reducing health disparities and improving health equity? How do we create a future where people receive support to stay well, rather than just treating them when they are sick? It starts with research. It starts with conversations. It starts with listening. It starts with understanding. Supporting people in their journey to good health is part of how we can create a better world. I'm Ellen Beckjord. Good Health, Better World is a show about how stronger communities begin with good health for everyone, even outside the doctor's office. In episode 4, we hear from Everett McElveen, Chief Executive Officer at Community Human Services, and John Lovelace, President of UPMC for You and President of Government Programs and Individual Advantage Products at UPMC Insurance Services Division.
But first, let's listen to a short field report by Post Industrial Media.
Homelessness is traumatizing, and the intersections of physical health and mental health are connected in greater ways than we perceive. I think that people are experiencing exploitation and re-victimization, living on the street, are participating in behaviors that are for survival but harmful to their overall health.
My name is Jess Netto. I am currently the Program Director of Housing Solutions and work as a social worker within the Cultivating Health for Success program at Community Human Services.
I think having a home is not only necessary in terms of shelter for your physical body, physically, your blood pressure and respiratory issues, and all of those factors that have been impacted by stress living on the street improve over time. But being able to access a stove where you can cook your own meals and really being able to access and think beyond your basic needs, but your overall wellness. A particular success story that stands out for me is watching the transformation of someone's personality really come out and evolve after they experienced the safety of shelter for the first time. They had experienced chronic homelessness for the duration of their entire life. This was a reprieve from all of the physical trauma that they experienced on the street and the violence that incurred. He moved into his house and he just felt for the first time that he could breathe and that he did not have to look behind his back. So for the first time, he was able to focus inward, really address the root causal factors of his street homelessness over the years.
I'm so happy to welcome Everett McElveen to this episode of Good Health, Better World. Everett is the CEO of Community Human Services. Everett, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure, Ellen. I appreciate it.
Tell us a little bit about Community Human Services and the good work that you do?
Community Human Services was founded in Oakland in the early 1970s, actually by a neighborhood group. It was a group of neighbors that saw the community sort of, you know, going in the wrong direction. A lot of gentrification at the time, families were moving out, and they came together to try to help each other and other members of the community. Then they basically rented a storefront and started CHS. And since that time, the organization has kept that same grassroots type of feel. We are a very open and welcoming organization that serves anyone. We believe as a value that everybody has value. The largest part of our services is around housing and homelessness and the prevention of homelessness. We operate several, permanent supportive housing programs, rapid rehousing programs. We also do emergency shelters. We operate several shelters across the county. We also operate family shelters for families that are homeless as well. With UPMC, we're doing the Cultivating Health for Success program, which is a unique partnership nationally to have a nonprofit working with a healthcare system in terms of trying to bring together the related housing and health issues. Do in-home services for seniors and people with disabilities so that they can stay in their homes as well. So CHS, people really don't realize all that we are involved in and what we do. And so sometimes it's like we're the best kept secret. Hopefully people can find out a little bit more about us and, receive the services and help that we provide.
Such critical services. Is the housing security landscape in Allegheny County in southwestern Pennsylvania like? And has it changed during the pandemic, or has it, changed over the time that you've been at Community Human Services?
Pennsylvania, I think there's roughly about over 13,000 people that would be considered as they would count as homeless, but those are only like point in time. And then people that are, sort of doubled up in homes, people that are on the verge of, becoming, homeless. There's also situations where, people are like couch surfing from one place to another as well. So you never really know the total number, but the numbers in terms of the counts, they are going up. The people accessing services due to COVID are going up, and so it has presented, different needs in the community due to COVID-19 and housing. One of those is, CHS operates a Safe Haven Hotel, which is a isolation and quarantine hotel for homeless individuals and at-risk, high-risk individuals of having adverse outcomes from COVID, so that they can get out of, get off the street or get out of a shelter situation where they're in a group setting with a bunch of people. Or if they are test positive, they are quarantined at the facility that CHS runs.
Talking with you and thinking about this episode of Good Health, Better World, which is focused on housing as a social determinant of health, it seems so obvious that stable and secure housing is, of course, a requirement. But I don't know that it's been appreciated as being an obvious thing until relatively recently. What's your perspective on how housing as a social determinant has kind of come around to be thought of in the context of a broader way of thinking about health? Has that improved?
That housing first basically affects and improves upon, persons like their educational attainment, employment, the health, family relationships. All of those things improve when people are living in stable housing. All of those factors are better. So the partnership with UPMC is, bringing our expertise together with providing, you know, good health care to individuals that are, you know, homeless, or they are, you know, they have housing instability. And so, you know, we are bringing that together, which, you know, we provide, you know, there's the case management. We help the individuals find housing. We actually do the, you know, do the landlord negotiations. We help the person get through the Section 8 type of process. But, you know, our team, along with the UPMC team, we've been able to continue to get people housed during this time of COVID. So from a CHS perspective and the partnership with UPMC, I'm very, very proud of our staff and their ability to continue to assist the, you know, UPMC clients to get into stable housing.
I appreciate the way you've described housing as just so foundational. You know, there are lots of different social determinants that we know have a huge impact on health and health outcomes. It's foundational. And then from there, stability or improvements around education, around job security, health, et cetera, can follow. But without that foundational housing security, it's just so difficult to put those other critical things in place as well.
It's trying to get the broader community to understand, you know, how critical, you know, housing first is. Oftentimes people look poorly on individuals that are homeless and as if, it, you know, it's their fault. You know, there are many ways that people become homeless. We have in Allegheny County the largest cohort of people that are street or, you know, homeless, that are actually living either in abandoned buildings or that type of thing, is individuals with mental health issues. You know, putting, you know, more attention and funding as a community towards ending homelessness and helping people, it improves everything for everybody. It's less emergency room visits. People are actually showing up to their mental health appointments. And we assist. That's kind of our role in the partnership with UPMC, is to do that piece, to do that work of, you know, following up with the person, get, you know, following up with the housing, you know, helping them, you know, sort of make appointments, you know, help, you know, because all of that matters in terms of, you know, their better health outcomes.
There are other things that once housing is established, then those other things, there's support that can be provided to put other things in place as well.
Correct.
So before being Community Human Services CEO, you were the COO of Family Links. I mean, your career has been a career of service. Your career has been focused on being of service in the nonprofit sector. Can you talk a little bit about what has drawn you to this work?
Well, I usually just tell people I'm a preacher's kid, and some things get kind of ingrained, you know, into you. My first job was at a shelter for women fleeing domestic violence and also homeless families. And, you know, because I said, you know, I always wanted to, you know, kind of be in human services. So that was my first job at the shelter. And, you know, just saw firsthand, you know, what's really going on in the world. And, you know, you can't learn that really from books.
All of us are really only one or a handful of events away from needing that kind of help. Has that been apparent to you? And you, when, that you know, and there's so much stigma associated with help seeking for some people, and you know that can be such a barrier. How has thinking about the way that all of us could need this help at any point in time guided the way that you approach your work and the way that the organizations you have led have approached the work?
The ones that I've worked with, it's all about, you know, culture. You know, not sure who said it, but, you know, it's sort of culture trumps strategy all the time. And it's really having to instill within the people that you hire that they share the values of the organization, that you provide reinforcements of those values within the culture of the organization. Is really what makes the difference, you know, for, you know, doing this work. Everybody deserves, you know, dignity and respect regardless of their situation. We're sort of all in this together, and we're not like in control completely of our lives, even though people think we are, you know, and that things happen in life that puts people in a very difficult situation. You know, health issues can have somebody end up being homeless. You're unable to work. Onset of a mental health issue that you were fine before and, you know, now you're not. You know, it could be simple enough of, you know, you were working and you were great and you had a stroke mm-hmm. and that changed your trajectory. It can be family trauma, you know, that happens. So if we can all just see ourselves as the same, regardless of our circumstances in life, I think it moves this issue from, somebody's asking me for money to, well, what can I do?
One of the things that is in the realm of thinking about social determinants of health is the degree to which those social determinants are at play for some communities more than others, and you know how we can strive for more equity and equity in housing. You know, there's historical and systemic inequity around housing for African American communities, and I'm wondering if that's something that still, you know, has an impact on the communities that CHS is serving today, and how much work there's left to do around bringing more equity into housing opportunity.
Well, you're getting into the issue of affordable housing, the affordable housing stock, you know, how much is available, you know, in our, you know, communities. And the answer is there's not enough. And, you know, sort of where they do exist, they tend to be in, you know, not the best, you know, areas. But the issue is there's not enough affordable housing stock, you know, in the area for, you know, to choose from. So that will be and continues to be a challenge. And that's another area where it's another issue of, okay, hey, the community, are we going to come together to kind of solve this problem? Or are we just going to complain about the problem?
Would it be fair to say then that as the work continues to solve for or to give more folks stable and secure housing, that these issues around equity with respect to housing have to be in parallel advanced and solved for, and we have to make meaningful progress there too?
Yes. You know, it's sort of like what I started at the beginning, you know, about, you know, the, you know, sort of effects of somebody being homeless, you know, okay, you're less likely to get, you know, finish an education or improve your education. You're less likely to have a good job or employment. Your health is not going to be that great. You may have a lot of other issues going on with you. And then you have a lot of family issues, a lot of, you know, issues in terms of sustaining family relationships. So everybody, you know, and, you know, definitely like UPMC, like the partnership that I mentioned earlier with the Cultivating Health for Success is embracing that idea, you know, that, you know, where people live, we even, you know, give people a choice.
Sometimes homelessness is talked about as a problem that has to be solved, you know, like a crisis around homelessness, and certainly represents many problems that have to be solved. But it sounds like the orientation at CHS is not how do we solve this person's problem, but more how do we care for this person?
Yeah, at CHS, the saying that's often said is, you know, just meeting people where they're at.
I would like to give you an opportunity to share anything else that you might like listeners to know about the work happening at CHS?
You know, we've been working remotely, mostly people that can. Our shelter staff have been on site, you know, during this time. At times we have been doing so much because we've been asked to do more and more during this COVID period. Pre-COVID, I think we've added 30 staff over this time, and we are still hiring, you know, at this point. So with the Safe Haven Hotel, we've been asked to take on some of the people that would generally go to the winter shelter down at the on Smithfield Street. So we are going to be taking that on beginning here in November. We are also providing, you know, people have sort of forgotten about the opioid crisis, but it is still going on. And so we operate a program to help people that have gone through treatment for opioid use, because generally then the person, once you've gone through it and you are technically usually homeless, you don't have a place of your own.
You know, you've been in this line of work for a long time, but this is the first time during a global pandemic. And I can't imagine how it must affect the demand for the services.
It has been a lot of work on, you know, our team, on our staff, you know, trying to keep people motivated and trying to, you know, show your, you know, appreciation for people that are really struggling, you know, right now. And, you know, it's not really being seen. But there's also a lot of positive things going on where the community has really come together. The foundation community has really stepped up. The United Way has really, you know, kind of, you know, jumped in along with, you know, providers and, you know, Allegheny County DHS. So there's a lot of coordination and cooperation that's going on that, you know, people just don't see.
I just want to thank you for all of the work that you and the folks at Community Human Services are doing, all the work you have been doing, and certainly now during the pandemic. And also want to say thank you for spending time with us today on the Good Health, Better World podcast. It's just been such a pleasure to speak with you today.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, and thank you for having me.
I'm so glad that you're here with us today on the Good Health, Better World podcast. John Lovelace is the president of Government Programs and Individual Advantage Products at UPMC Health Plan. He's the president of UPMC4U, a managed care organization that serves medical assistants and Medicare Advantage Special Needs Plan recipients across the Commonwealth. Welcome, John.
I'm always happy to talk about this subject.
You've been involved in a number of initiatives in this space for a long time, so I know it may seem kind of obvious, but I would love to hear, just in your own words, why we would seek to be in the housing space as a payer and how housing is foundational to health.
A couple of things, I think, that come to mind. One is, you think of Abraham Maslow and the famous triangle of services, of course. If you don't have enough food to eat, you don't have enough a place to stay, you don't feel safe, you can't work on other things, like whether it's your healthcare or self-actualization or taking care of your family. I think for us, it is, we really got into this for a couple of ways. What we now call social determinants of health are much more prominent in behavioral health services because there's very little technology to behavioral health, but it's a lot of social stuff. It's not a very medical model compared to medicine. So the idea that people leaving institutional care or people avoiding leaving hospitals have to have a place to go is really much more innate in behavioral health than it is in medicine. My first real job was in a state hospital, and people, it was in the beginning of deinstitutionalization. One of my graphics was the hospital I worked in 1970, which had 3,500 patients in it. And there were plenty of people ready to go, but they had nowhere to go. They had no family. They had no relative, you know, just nowhere. And we were not very successful at helping people be successful in the community, because even when you have a place to live, there's a lot more to your life than having a place to live, having friends. We couldn't be a housing agency for people, but you could certainly make partnerships and collaborations that braid funding together in a way that, in the same way that housing people can't provide medical care, we're not providing housing care. But together, we can do both.
And that's really been the central feature of the Cultivating Health for Success program, this notion of needing to partner with the systems that are in place that have resources
to help people secure housing, and our role as the payer of connecting individuals who we know need that kind of service or who need housing support to those services. So can you tell us a little bit more about the Cultivating Health for Success?
Well, let me give you the first year first, and I'll tell you how it changed. So when it started, it was a what in HUD vernacular is called Shelter Plus Care, which is focused on homeless people who are chronically homeless. So, and that's a pretty narrow definition of chronically homeless is like on the street for a year consecutively. So we started with a proposition to the Department of Human Services to say, you have money to create housing opportunities. It needs a match. We're spending money on people in their healthcare, which could be a match. So let's use that money as a match, and we'll put up some money for care management, and we'll create this Shelter Plus Care program, it was called then, for people who are chronically homeless. And in our case, it was chronically homeless people who were disabled, who also were obviously Medicaid recipients and homeless. That was very successful in lots of ways, but it's very hard to find people who meet all the definitions. So we wanted to expand the scope in two ways. One was to reach people who were not necessarily a year on the street, because there are lots of people who are a month on the street or a week on the street or are going to be on the street. So housing insecure rather than homeless. And the second was to get further upstream, if you will. So let's not wait till people have fallen off the cliff and have a year's worth of unplanned health care. Mostly you can tell who that's going to be before it happens. The new model matches our people with the Housing Authority, Housing Choice Voucher Program, which is known locally, generally as Section 8. We can use the vouchers at a 90% rate, not a 20% rate. And so because the housing authorities have been cooperative, and it's mostly the help of Community Human Services, our housing partner, they're the ones with the relationships, and the work of the County Department of Human Services, who funds the other part of the program, that we have the opportunity to, and we've gone from, I think, an average census of 16 or 17 people, the cap was 25, to I think we're in the 50s. You can go anywhere and do that. Any housing authority can, they all have a similar problem to using vouchers. The process you have to use to get to a voucher is quite complicated. So having people expedite the process, having people help, means you get to be much more efficient. So it's good for the housing authority. It's good for the person. It's good for us. It's really just a lovely partnership. You can stay a week. You can stay 10 years. It's when you think you're ready. So it just makes it's a harm reduction model, and makes it much easier for people to for us to meet people where they are.
Really low barriers to entry.
Very low barrier.
And support provided to access support.
Yes.
I feel like that's a recurring theme as we talk about the different services that are available. There are lots of supports available to people who are negatively affected by social determinants, but there's quite often a need to provide support to those individuals to access the support that's available.
Yes. So here's a referral. Hardly ever works. I'm going to give you a card. You go call somebody else. So there are lots of practical things that it's very hard to navigate. If you've navigated it once or twice, you can do it. You know, that's why we have case managers. There are people who know how to make this work. There aren't a lot of people who know how to make this work in multiple settings. So the opportunity to put this together, and this is pretty intensive with people. It's a lot of, if you need something at 2 a.m, you can call, and people don't. But you could. And just knowing that you could means mostly that people don't come and go to the emergency room because they know someone will be there in the morning and they don't want to. It's a relationship. I don't want to bother you, Ellen. I know you have a kid at home and I don't wake up at 2 unless I really need something. I'll wait. Rather than I'm going to call an ambulance and go to the ER.
Talk about the future of the Cultivating Health for Success program. It's currently in place in Allegheny County. Is that going to expand? And if so, sort of on what timeline and to where, as much as you can share?
Yeah, well, it depends on where there are receptive housing authorities, but I think there are housing authorities everywhere. And this problem I mentioned about utilization of vouchers is not unique to Allegheny County. We'd like to look at doing this across Western PA. It certainly is, I think, with the housing authority cooperation, it's eminently expandable.
Oh, that's so exciting. And it just strikes me as thinking about how to replicate this, across other counties within Pennsylvania or, of course, nationally. There's, as you mentioned, there's just a whole ecosystem and set of policies around housing that partnership is so important.
Absolutely. So it's exciting to be able to bridge this. And it's been very heartening, really, for everybody to find enthusiastic partners. the people here who do this love what they're doing. The people at Community Human Services are just very, they've always been very enthused about this.
Just feels like sort of in many different places, there's sort of innovative partnerships happening, navigating different and probably relatively complex policies, figuring out financial models. I mean, what a great blueprint for how to make a partnership like that work. And as you pointed out, it's just sort of everybody is winning in the context of this. I know another example, slightly different. UPMC became one of six hospital systems as in partnership with Accelerating Investments in Healthy Communities to create more affordable housing. Can you tell us a little bit about that initiative and what UPMC's role in it is?
Sure. That is much more of a community investment initiative than it is a member initiative. So it's not focused on our membership at all. What we're going to do is invest some reserves in UPMC for You, the company, into building a capital stack, which means partnering with banks who have community reinvestment obligations, with foundations, and with community development financial institutions, which are essentially nonprofit banks, to create a fund which will then finance affordable housing. So none of us are housing developers. People are housing developers are folks like Action Housing or Trek, or there are lots of them. So that is to create affordable housing in communities. This is a place where there's lots of old housing stock here that can be renovated, land banks. It's very complicated financing, but there's enough there to create both rental and home ownership opportunities. A lot of opportunity, I think, in renovating housing.
Curious about what you feel hopeful about, because these are the problems that you've chosen to work on, as I understand it, over the balance of your career, are not easy problems to solve. And yet, you know, you've persisted and had lots of impact through the work that you and the teams that you've led have done. So, you know, maybe where do you feel like there's the most opportunity to continue to make progress? And what do you feel, if anything, particularly hopeful about?
Well, a couple of things. I think it's one of the rewarding parts of being here, I think, is I've always felt supported in terms of what I'm trying to do. It's really about impacting healthcare cost and quality by doing things around the edges of that, if you will, around housing and food and things that make people more successful in their lives. I'm very excited about the Center for Social Impact that we stood up last year in a way of sort of consolidating these efforts. The reason housing isn't affordable is because people don't have good enough jobs, right? The reason people have Medicaid is not because they're not working. They just work in crappy jobs with no benefits, right? And so they don't make enough money to be able to afford health insurance. So just making connections tighter where they exist or the opportunities is really part of what makes this kind of exciting. So if you make more money, you can afford a better house and you can live in a neighborhood you want to live in and you can eat better and you have better health and it all kind of goes around.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with us on the podcast today, John?
Well, I think it's really just a great opportunity. I'm happy to see the state Medicaid leadership has taken this on and is requiring MCOs to enter new value-based arrangements with community benefit organizations next year. There are lots of people trying to make a difference in the lives of people who are low income. It's been just a really wonderful opportunity here to put things together in a different kind of way. I think much more engaging to think about how you're building a house and how you're fixing a kidney for most people. It's nice to see that much enthusiasm. People feel more engaged, I think.
John, I want to thank you again for taking the time to talk with us today. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Good Health, Better World, presented by UPMC Health Plan. Have a joyous holiday season. Be sure to come back next time.